and here with my friend Vanessa. And we're just walking back to the Queens here. Queens Ave. And pondering, like, you know, when you become housed, Vanessa, you've been housed for 2 years now?
Yeah.
After being on the street for 7?
Yeah.
So, and I was on the street for 4. And I know that I didn't go inside, like, honestly, for a good 3 years.
Transition's hard.
Like, I didn't go inside. I went inside to, like, maybe use the washrooms and stuff like that, but I was never inside for more than 10 minutes.
Yeah.
And literally, I just became accustomed to, like, especially in the climate, accustomed to, like, living outdoors, right? Yeah. And it's a thing when you live on the street that you get comfort, if you can believe that. You get to a certain sense of freedom for sure. You get to a place where you can do that and the other average person couldn't do that. And your sense of survival is heightened because you get this certain kind of like, not entitlement, but a sense of, you know, you're Superman in a sense, right? So we get inside because even though you're an individual who says, you know, these comforts are not for me, and I can, you know, roam wherever I may go, and you know, chest out, proud. But your feet get tired, and your fucking back gets tired, and it sucks fucking and having no money and all that shit, right? So it's nice to have the comforts of home. So we all desire, really, a home to go to. I mean, every human being needs a dwelling. Every human being needs a dwelling. That's part of the American Constitution. That's part of the Canadian Constitution. That's part of the United Nations Constitution, which doesn't mean anything anymore. But
I had to stop myself right there. I realize I don't even know what the fuck I'm talking about. Interesting. How you doing? That's how it's going. I talk like, I don't know, I try to get the point across. Homelessness sucks. And, I don't know how to tell politicians or anybody else who's interested. The first way to solve homelessness is to give people housing. It doesn't matter if they're who they are. It just, housing is the way to solve homelessness. We need more affordable, adequate housing. I'm proud to have, Dougie Sweet on today's show, Homeless Idea. And that's not cheesy. I have to introduce the show. I have to say it's gotta have a name. So I'm not being cheesy, I'm just saying Homeless Idea, here we go. It was my honor to interview Dougie Sweet, a good friend of mine, and also a leader in the Victoria Street community. Doug's hard-fought battles against PHS and the Johnson Street building won the right to for visitors in the supportive housing buildings. Doug Sweet on the Homeless Idea.
So
okay, so here I am sitting at my buddy Dougie's place. And Dougie is been a leader in the street community for quite some time, spanning over probably a couple decades. How did you get in today, Dougie?
How did I get in?
Yeah. It's this thing we do. It's how did you get in? How did you arrive today at the podcast?
I don't know.
Kind of put him on the spot there.
You set up an appointment with him and you came and seen him.
There we go. This is a mystery. A lot of people know you from Super Intense City, the political work you did there. And I want to just kind of go over that with you, Dougie. Just where do you see now? I mean, what was the difference now between now and then in the street community and the solidarity? What was it? Where's the gap?
Well, I think the big difference is with the Cornhole Tent City. We didn't start that up to be a tent city. We were just, you know, a bunch of campers that found a place we set our tents up, and we even set up without being bothered. We didn't know why at the beginning. And we ended up doing this ultimately was forming a community amongst a bunch of people who would not normally get along with each other, but we did. The police didn't have jurisdiction because that was Crown land. We didn't know that in the beginning.
So it was just kind of, you guys just came together at that spot because it was where you didn't get hassled by bylaw.
That's right.
And the city's approach at the time was the same now, is it has no approach to homelessness. It doesn't even recognize homelessness as a...
No, of all the experience the city has in homelessness and the amount of money, which is phenomenal, it's put into it. And it's not the homeless people that are getting the benefit from it. It's everybody else that's around us.
So is it better or worse than 5 years ago?
It's worse than 5 years ago.
Why is it worse?
Well, in one big way, Tent City, we were in there almost a year. We had one death. It was a suicide.
Right.
And you look at any of these other places, how many deaths are every year?
Mm-hmm.
You know, 10 plus almost every place.
Oh.
So that says in itself there's something wrong going on there, and nobody's looking into it. Everybody's ignoring it, and they're just trying to point fingers as who's to blame. We're battling constantly because the police wanted to come in such a worse way. They figured the worst things were going on in there. We weren't. We were just living, trying to live. And they were taking away our heating supplies. We had wood. They'd take it away. We had any propane. They would take it away. It was pure fire. The only fires that were in that tent city were the ones when the people came by and firebombed some of the tents.
The city kind of uses the same tactics, do you find, now as they did then, or these are... They kind of developed them. This is in 2016, correct?
Basically, yeah, when we started up, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, okay.
Like, there's no sense in what their rulings were, you know, after all the bull that they put us through. We slowly broke our backs there, and through the vent of lies and stopping us from communicating through the media and that. The government never once tried to come and talk to us.
Right.
Yeah, so what they say, they build us on a lot of lies, you know, and, you know, they're going to come back and say, yeah, well, you got a criminal record, you're a criminal, and why should we believe you, and we're honest people because we're policemen and we're, you know, firemen and we're trustworthy.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Well, they lied just as much as me and you. They spend money on making us look bad, trying to make us look bad.
Well,
and we're just people trying to find a place to live. You know?
It's almost like an assisted suicide.
Oh, absolutely. You said that they force you, in a sense, or they lead you to the water, but then they pull the water dish away when you get there. I found that in the housing department, they have people that are housed will find another house to move to before they'll give a homeless person a chance.
Absolutely.
You know, so that's why you meet people and you say, I've been on that waiting list for 3 years. And they'll probably have another three more to go before they might even have a chance, a slight chance, of getting a house.
That led to the Johnson Street building. Superintensity.
Which, you know, again, there's a law in place that says that you cannot take a person or a group of people and move them from one area to another if you're in a worse off situation.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, like the first year in the Johnson building, there was over 10 deaths. The first year in Tent City, there was one death.
Right.
Now, would you not say that classified as being in a worse place to be?
Absolutely.
Your odds have just increased by, you know, immensely, that you're gonna probably die.
What's it like? Give me a day in the Johnson. What it's like? What's just give me a picture of what the Johnson Street as you remember, like has it started? What it's like now?
Well, you're dealing with a person who was promising you. Like I had about 30 promises when we were in Tent City that were gonna make to us, and they never honored one of them. And they're standing there going, "Well, just give us a chance. Just give us a chance." And you know, let's see, once again, Paul's stupid to that idea, give them a chance and we get licked over one more time. Mm-hmm.
They, how did they get involved?
The government put them in there. They walked into Portland Hotel Society and they got rid of the founding members and they walked in place with their own people.
Okay, now were they part of the negotiations when you guys were in superintendent? Because you gave a list of demands for what you wanted, it's what we would call supportive housing, I guess.
Well, that's what they give us. We didn't ask for supportive housing.
Did you ever see any of that materialize?
No, nothing.
And then what, like, you know, how did it deteriorate to such a point as it is today? Where was it, where was the crack?
Well, the problem is that when we're put in there, there is, I believe, a $55 million pot put in there to help people for programming and so on and so forth. And when to date, there's not been
anything
one program ever offered to anybody. And not only that, that $55 million is gone and nobody's asking questions.
Just like the $96 million that was, you know, invested by the federal government into the CRD, where has that gone? That's, who knows?
Same way.
Yeah, absolutely. The way of the dinosaur.
That's right.
You know, new decks for the politicians, I don't know what it is.
The average person reads the newspaper and says, oh, good, look, they're getting, you know, $94 million put into their situation. When it's not so. That's not what's happening.
No, absolutely. And since the beginning, there's just been a massive... seems a waste of money. This is the money that gets put into the situation just gets completely diverted,
yeah,
and it goes to other places and the situation gets worse.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. And it's been the same since the beginning. That's how that's how Johnson Street has ended up where it is today.
Mm-hmm.
Now you're in one of the buildings now that's supportive housing, as they call it.
Yes, it is, yeah.
So, which is actually where we're doing the interview today, at Dougie's Place. Thanks, Dougie, for having us.
This, I feel very lucky to be here, because it's one of the very few places that actually do what they say they're going to do.
Right.
And they treat us with respect.
And supportive housing now falls under the residential tenancy agreement. So if you're in supportive housing, you actually do have tenancy rights. You can go to arbitration against the program, or whatever they're trying to, you know, get people to sign onto. Nowadays, it's this program that they actually trying to tell you that you're signing away your residential tenancy rights. Did that start in the Johnson Building? Was that the program started there? Because the program is, you know, notoriously for being what's in effect over the residential tenancy agreement in supportive housing, but yet nobody knows what the program is about.
Most people go in and don't even realize they're on the program until months later.
Right.
When somebody happens to mention it, they go, what program is? Yeah, the program they have is keeping secret. They're not telling us anything about it.
Right.
And things of like what I had achieved was that in the Johnson Building, for example, their front entrance where they stop you and get your names and stuff like that. Well, that's totally illegal. And this is what the courts said. And once again, PHS has chosen to go their own route and do things their way and ignore everything else. So he said that only the people who went to court were allowed to have that privilege. Mm-hmm. Wrong. What I had achieved there was for everybody, not just the few of us that went through the court system.
Right.
Yeah, it's just people are funny that way. We get, like, say, threatened or bought off.
And that seems to be the thing. They have this, like they're trying to use nothing about us without us as a slogan for right. us. And we never even like use that. I never said that. You never said that.
No.
But they seem to be taking this approach about towards the homeless, and then they seem to be tokenizing people, and giving certain people, you know, rewards for saying certain things, and then in reality things are being completely bypassed. Do you find that's a reality?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I would say that's happening. Absolutely.
And then when you see it on the street too, or you see people in the conditions of living that they're in a country like that is Canada, and you see this shit, and you realize the government is absolutely almost doing things backwards. It's like they're...
Unperfect, yeah.
And they're not even admitting there's a problem, right?
Well, you keep acknowledging.
Why do you think, buddy?
Why do I think that?
Yeah.
Oh, Jesus, the government never acknowledges.
You remember why?
They refuse to talk to us, and who do you go to? You say that in the media, but guess what? They're not going to print it that way. You turn on, get a spin doctor in there, and turn on and throw it at us, saying we're the ones who've been talking.
Well, it's exactly what they said with the fire orders and the health orders and the public, you know, the health emergency crisis is that they call it in these tent cities. It's just another way of the city just using their leverage to shut it down. Right, I mean,
and
they're just displacing homeless people into the other displacement. It's what do you do? It's like you say, we can't go to Mars.
People would get up in the morning and say, go somewhere to try and find some breakfast. And the person would come back to find his tent gone. Because they had gathered it up while he was gone, waiting for him to leave. And as soon as he left, they gathered it up and threw it in the garbage bin, literally.
Yeah, it's the same tactics he used now, exact same tactics.
Yeah, and, you know, they got all these laws saying they can do this, but there isn't one law protecting us.
Isn't that the truth?
And they use it against you. Once again, money that's provided for us is being used to fight us against us. And like I was saying earlier, you look at whether police, fire department, hydro, or any aspect of the people that we're facing on a daily basis. Every one of them was government funded except for two people, two parties, the Sikh Society and Reverend Al.
Right.
We had no government funding.
And that's Dougie Sweet. Dougie fought, like I say, really hard for human rights in Victoria. And it's a pleasure to have him on the show and to honor Dougie. That kind of brings us to our next interview where kind of the same thing, just more along the same lines. It's what happened at the Johnson Street building, and it's just kind of become like a virus and spread. So, I mean, here's Adrian and Shirley, just to let you know what it's really like. Just tell me about this insurance policy that you heard about.
Okay. Apparently it's $100,000 life insurance on every person that's in here. Now, to do that, you'd have to sign up for it or something, right?
Right.
But there's all those papers we signed, and there was a person who asked for their paper, a copy of their paperwork, but they only gave them 2 pages. But there was like maybe 14 pages or something that we had to initial all the way through.
You don't have to say which building. You don't have to say which one. How many papers did you sign when you signed up?
Yeah, there was a huge booklet.
A huge booklet.
Yeah.
And so some other people are just coming in and signing 2 papers. So it's not the
when
same
when they're
program.
Getting their papers, they ask for a copy of the paperwork they signed.
Mm-hmm.
They give 2 pages to you.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Okay.
And there's a bunch of pages. It's like, well,
that are missing.
You know, I'm curious about the fine print.
Yeah.
Right? And then I start thinking that, like, whenever there's a death here, it seems like they come in threes.
Yeah.
Right? And I've never really seen a gurney or an ambulance or anything come for these people. I wonder if it's even known when they go missing. Like, when a person in drug addiction dies, there is no investigation of any
none
sort.
Most
death
of the time,
by drugs.
Never.
So how easy would it be to be, you know, advancing people? Because basically you're signing away that I'm choosing to die here when you sign to live here, right?
I don't
Which
know.
Which is an inevitable event.
They won't
use.
Ever turn up the paperwork for the program, right? I mean, they won't. They won't explain the program to anybody. Nobody knows what the program's about. So, I mean,
there is no program. That's what makes it not make sense, right?
But then that replaces your residential tenancy rights.
So yeah. We should be in a regular tenancy agreement because there is no program.
Absolutely.
But it's not tenancy, it's program. When you ask them what kind of program you're doing, because, you know, like when I live in Chinatown, I'm like, what program am I under? What program am I doing? I never got a straight answer.
Have you asked them if you have residential tenancy rights?
Yeah, and they said no because we're not under residency, we're not under the hotels, we're not under anything, we're under a program. I'm like, okay, so what program am I doing? Because I don't remember even, like, I never got told of any of the other, like, honorarium programs. I'm not told about any of the school, like.
I've seen signs up saying that there's recovery opportunities or access or something to do with recovery, but I've never seen any program of recovery or anything like that offered.
Right.
Yeah, no staff came up to me to do goals, nothing, and I had, when every time I got barred, I had to re-sign new paperwork. By the end of my stay there, because I got kicked out for calling somebody a goof because they pushed me into the coffee maker.
These things happen, yeah.
And I got discharged, and they literally couldn't tell me where my paperwork was, and I had 23, in the end I had 24 program agreements.
We technically don't pay rent, we pay for resources.
Right.
So we don't fall under the Tennessee Act. We don't
fall under that. He knows that.
That's what you were just talking about.
Yeah, we pay for, like, the nurses and all that stuff.
Right.
So it's a question of two. Here's where you can save yourself. If they lock you out of your room, stay on the property. You cannot technically be a non-resident until the second you hit that side.
In the papers we signed, it said that stealing was a big deal. And, like, if someone's clothes are stolen, like, it would be on camera, but they've gone as far as to tell me that the cameras in the laundry room don't work. You know, and it's like, okay, well, wouldn't it be better to just go ask a person for your stuff back
right.
and someone find them wearing it, and then there's an altercation?
It doesn't make any sense. It's almost like they fuel altercations here. It's almost like they escalate things. But what do you think about the security here, like when you guys
are... The security are only here to tell people that they need to leave, and there's people dying because they can't shoot up in a safer environment, right?
It's a safe injection site.
It should be.
Yeah.
Right? And telling family members, like a mother with her son here that's under 18 is told the kid has to leave, and younger girls and guys can't have their parents come visit them or anything.
Right. Yeah. How's that road to recovery?
No visitor thing is ridiculous. That's the only thing security really do. I've seen people get hurt pretty bad and security just watch.
Really? Yeah, so there's actually no actual security.
No, I don't know what they secure. They run and hide behind the staff. Actually, I have Tiny Town. There's somebody that actually was almost stabbed to death in Tiny Town, and the security literally hid in the staff's office with the staff and just let the fight go on.
So they're not there for your security?
No.
They're only securing a paycheck and telling people that they need to leave so that they have... I don't know. It seems like they're trying to push away any anyone who might witness something, or like if you were to be dying or like near death, who's going to protect you or who's going to be there for you?
There's a non-resident that was attacked by a security member, actually, by the security.
Do you guys feel better, safer when you're on the street or safer now here in this building, or do you feel that people are the same?
My girlfriend wants to leave here as quick as we can. She does not feel safe here, does not feel safe in her room, doesn't feel safe in my room, anywhere around here.
No.
I call this place like assisted suicide.
My mom can't even shower. She sees a laser going across her room. She hears people underneath her. She hears people above her.
We keep hearing digging.
Yeah.
Drills and fucking...
She smells grout, like fucking... caulking and stuff in the middle of the night. She's seen drill, like a screw come through the her fucking, like her.
Then there's been times like.
Has your mom having? Does she have mental problems?
Nope.
No. Really?
She does crack, but I mean, it's never affected her that way. She's only had 4 showers in the last like 3 years she's lived here, because she's seen her vent go down and seen people like.
I stayed at the tower over there, and there was some really weird stuff that happened too.
Staying in the tower with my girlfriend, I thought she was in the beginning of a psychosis, perhaps, and she totally wasn't. Mm-hmm. She'd turned the fan off, turned the TV off, and I could actually hear the screaming, and it was so loud.
In the tower?
Yeah, from the 4th floor, that I don't get how staff on the 2nd would not have heard it. So then I wonder, okay, if they can hear this and it's still going on, are they then allowing that?
My friend, I watched them terrorize people in that building. Like, I was down the hall. I watched them evict somebody who was completely out of their like mind, stoned. And that's allowed. It's a wet building, right? I mean, they encourage it here, it seems. So he was completely out of it. He had no idea what he was even doing. And they totally like tricked him, played him, and were like totally playing head games, provoking him. Knocking on his door and running away. I watched him do it, right? So it does happen. I mean, even on that minor of a scale, there's games that are played by the staff, absolutely. So,
yeah, there was one incident with the staff where they asked me why I was in the hallway, and I said, my girlfriend's using the washroom, and the bathroom door won't close right now, so I've stepped out to give her some privacy. And then she reached forward with her key and opened the door, and I'm like, what are you doing? And I got pretty mad because I thought it was unprofessional, and like I didn't threaten her or get aggressive at all, but she claimed differently, and I guess there's no audio recording to prove what really happened.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I said, look, you're the one in the wrong here, like you should be getting in trouble, not me.
You're invading my privacy.
I was then given a 2-day bar so that I could not dispute it when like my girlfriend needs me there with her as a like support.
To explain the bar, what happens when you're barred?
You get kicked off property, you're not allowed any services, you're not even allowed to get safe harm reduction plans. You can't even go in and talk, like at Tiny Town, you can't even knock on the door and ask for your mail. You have to wait until you're back in. And even when you go to go back in, you have to sign a total new agreement. Well, I did, nobody else did. I had to sign a new agreement. That's where the whole 20, like at the end of my stay there, I had stayed from the day they opened just until about 4 months ago. They put me on a 4-day bar because of that incident with somebody, and they ended up, they kicked me out.
They kick you out of program services, the entire bit. And are you allowed to access our place downtown if you're kicked out of this place?
I don't think so, actually. No, I wasn't. I was told that when I was in dinner lineup, I had to leave because I was barred from the program, the whole program.
Oh,
because
wow.
Because I was barred from Tiny Town.
So no services whatsoever for four days?
For 4 days. I couldn't shower anywhere. I couldn't do anything. When I had gone to the bathroom, I guess I got some benzo dope and nodded out and passed out on the toilet for 16 hours. I had no safety checks, nothing. I woke up actually not on the toilet anymore. I was leaning against the wall with 8 Narcan needles around me and 4 nasal Narcans, and the door was ajar open. And I don't have any recollection of this whatsoever. And
holy shit, that's serious.
Yeah, and I pulled down.
Yeah, for the footage, there either won't be any, or they'll say you have to file a police report.
I know you're not supposed to ask a young lady or a woman her age, but can I ask you how old are you?
I'm 33. I just turned 33. This all happened when I was 32.
Yeah. Like, it's just far too young to be experiencing this kind of thing as well.
There's
never anybody should have to experience anything like that. But I mean,
another situation here with a girl, she's in a wheelchair, and they actually disciplined her because she's been lately having a problem with like peeing, and instead of disciplining her, I think that they should look into it a bit further. Like,
they're disciplining a person who's
generally
having
when
problems?
Someone starts peeing themselves, it stems from some form of sexual abuse, right? So like, maybe they could look into a bit further who's taking advantage of her or what's going on instead of disciplining her.
This is happening here?
Yeah,
she's okay, so they're disciplining her for...
I think she got barred for it or something, or for some other reason. She may have some...
why is it...
I got barred because 7 other residents at Tiny Town had on their phone recorded the whole time, and one of the male evening staff going into my room, fully knowing I was there. My blinds opened about 6 inches, and they saw him walk into my front, into my door. They locked it. They closed my blinds, closed my window, locked my window. I was in there for his half an hour break. He came out of my room, and I woke up to my door closing, and I was half undressed when I went to bed, fully clothed. And this happened 9 different times. I was also sexually assaulted by one of the residents, and 7 other females, unfortunately, at the time, got sexually assaulted from this resident. And he got discharged, and he had an hour and a half meeting with the manager, and he was back in no problem.
It's shocking to the senses. I mean, when you hear this kind of stuff, and I see it too. I mean, where I'm staying right now, it's literally like they put you in this frame of mind where you're just looking for to die. You almost just want that, you know, like out somewhere.
Exactly.
And it's like there's, and just like you say, there's no programs offered whatsoever.
No, I've never had a meeting with the staff for goals.
Would you guys take them if they were available?
Oh, yeah. Probably. I would totally.
So if you guys could, like, say, take programs and do this thing, like, you know, the Disney, Walt Disney Channel, get your life together club, you guys would go for that?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Well, congratulations. I mean, I think that anybody would. Like,
wanting to get clean. We were asking about, like, housing, because I've been hearing about apartments.
It's really good to hear that.
Actual apartments you can rent, but I think they're more for people who are living clean. And, like, we're wanting to get toward that. So I talked to the main guy, and the best he could offer me was another building pretty much the same as this.
Yeah.
But, like, I know that there is better accommodations in this away from people using, right?
So would you guys take a dry building?
Yeah, that's what we're trying to get into. That's what we want, so we can have a chance to get clean.
And I've heard another person that's, you know, my part of the, you know, big part of the street community saying that just the other day, that had he had been given a choice, or that he can go to a dry building or a wet building, because he went to a wet building because they're all wet buildings, that's why he didn't last there, because, you know, he wanted to go to a dry building. So
Like, my mom lives here. She lives over in the annex, and I get told by, like, you know, some of the staff that they're like, well, why don't you meet your mom off property? I'm like, she shouldn't have to leave the property to visit her oldest daughter. Like, she should be able to have her daughter in from the cold. Like,
you'd think they want family to come see.
I almost died last winter because of the hypothermia, and I literally was hypothermic. I was standing outside her door, and the minute I knocked on it, there's 5 staff and 2 security telling me to leave the property immediately. And it was clear to them that I had hypothermia. Like, my mom's like, you know what, fuck you, that's my daughter, I want her in. She's clearly hypothermic.
How would you say that makes you feel as a human being when these things are happening to you? Like, what kind of state of mind are you at?
Kind of helpless. Like, helpless, no one will listen.
Betrayed.
You know, like, our opinions aren't even valid. You know, just the whole, like, second-class citizen shit.
So you have, like, humanity stripped away from you.
Pretty much. Yeah. And, like, that nothing we say is credible because of the addiction thing, right? Like, I understand that. I don't really think it's fair. But,
no, it's not fair. It's not fair.
They could at least listen to it with a grain of salt and look into it, right?
So many people are saying it, man. Like, so many people are saying the same thing. It's not like one person's making this up. If you talk to you guys, and if you go talk to someone else completely unrelated to you guys, they would say the same thing.
I mean, people are dying. That's another thing, too, right?
Absolutely. What needs to happen, guys, to make things better here? Like, what really needs to happen?
There needs to be more, well, one, more housing, and two, more flexibility and
actual programs.
Actual programs and actual visitations, because I've known people to go, like, literally mental. They've lost their minds because they haven't been able to have a visitation.
People need support and togetherness and to be with their families.
Of course.
And if there's people dying because they're being kicked out into the cold, well, like, then they should be. It shouldn't be like that at all.
Well, if they had a guest policy, we'd have half the population of homeless people off the street because they could stay with their buddies and couch surf. Right? That'd be one thing. You know, that's just... if you're expecting people to recover from trauma on the street, or from street life, or from even drug addiction, from whatever, right? How do you expect to throw them in a place where they can have absolutely nobody around them that is a positive influence to them, or is a friendly face, and expect them to get better? And isolate them completely. It just doesn't make any sense as far as stabilization, or even in the hospital. If you're in the ICU, they let you have visitors.
Well, exactly. That's the thing.
And there you have it. Right from the beginning, through multiple different governments, something still hasn't changed. Right from the beginning of the Johnson Street building, access was denied to basic rights, tenancy rights, and visitors and everything like that. They were denied normal tenancy rights and normal residency. And this is from multiple different governments, so it just doesn't make sense. There's something happening. Here we have another story with Adrian and Shirley, who explain things haven't gotten better. We're still watching the Unsolved Mysteries. So I just want to say to everybody, Merry Christmas from Homeless Idea. I hope yours is a good one. And Happy New Year. Just in case we don't broadcast until the new year, I could be doing some time December 15th. So, Merry Christmas from the Homeless Idea.